Brown, Almost Our Culture, Current Events, Catholic Things. We talk about that every afternoon, 50 minutes. Interesting things brewing. I think a lot of stuff to discuss when it comes to what's happening in the Obama wiretap. That's what it is, apparently. The Trump administration and looking back at possibly how he could have been caught in the crossfire of a wiretap because of American targets being surveilled, not Trump as the target. This is crazy. It seems like a lot is getting overshadowed right now. We're going to talk about the repeal, replace Obamacare, all of that, which kind of seems to be taken front center. Then, of course, the attacks in London getting a lot of press. And this Representative Nunes bombshell, I think, yesterday that dropped in, yes, we have discovered that there is evidence of surveillance, but not what you think. That's kind of crazy. Kind of crazy. Also, Colin Kaepernick, the conservatives' favorite punching bag, doing some really, really amazingly good stuff. We're going to talk about that. And exactly what gospel realities look like when you don't realize they're gospel realities. We'll get into that as well. All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this. Current events, Catholic things. We talk about this for 50 minutes every afternoon. Condolences to those who lost their lives, including the attacker in the London situation yesterday. Tragic happening about that. All of this breaking about the time the show was on yesterday. But still sketchy as far as details, of course. But what we do know is that it was an attack. We know that. We know it was an intentional attack, and it wasn't just an accident. So when you see things of this nature, always tragic. But doesn't mean that this is now the opportunity to go and make negative remarks against the British government or especially the London city government, which is what Donald Trump Jr. decided to do, going to social media with critique of the Muslim mayor. Now, this is what we got to get beyond. One can be Muslim and not a terrorist. That's provable by the fact that we've got however 1.6 billion, is it close to 2 billion Muslims on the face of the planet? If all Muslims were terrorists, they would have already killed us all, if that's what they were bent on. Some sort of world domination of taking over, that could have already happened. But they are a world religion, a global religion, just like Catholicism. Catholicism that's had its share of questions as well. And it's not at all, a threat. In general, it is not a threat. The faith of the Muslim community is not a threat to you. As an aside, I heard a news report from my local state here of Kentucky regarding this proposed legislation for schools to be able to have greater religious liberty. It is feared by some that this would mean that they would then be able to be more discriminatory against gays and transsexual students. And I heard one of the defenders of the bill saying, well, Christians have been persecuted in this country for so long, it's time we have some solid protection of this nature. Now, I'm not sure we live in the same country. Because I have never felt persecuted for my faith. Not once. Not once has someone threatened me with death because I happen to be a Christian. Never heard that, never seen that, never experienced it, know nothing about it. I really don't know where that notion comes from. But I know everyone kind of has their own reality. But my goodness, if that's what we're thinking, and if after something of this nature, seeing this and looking at this as another attack from the Muslim community, that's a concern. That's a real concern. We can't do that. We can't make that type of assumption anymore. It's got to stop. It's just got to stop. So speaking of assumptions, speaking of realities, seeing something for one thing rather than what it is, Representative Nunes of the House Intelligence Committee came out yesterday afternoon with a very low fanfare, not a lot of stuff happening in this when it came to his remarks from the committee, basically saying, yeah, you know what, we did find evidence of some Trump phone calls. Yeah, it was true that there was some surveillance going on. And it's like, look, Obama was doing it. He was doing it. Look, finally, vindication. And that's been the reaction I've seen on this from the beginning. And I'm going, what, did you hear what he said? Yeah, he said that. But he also said there was two things he said. One, there was nothing illegally done from the Obama administration. And two, this was not a direct surveillance of Donald Trump. He just happened to be contacting the targets that the U.S. was already surveilling. Do you see what that means? I don't think that we see that. Because I know my Trump-supporting friends are saying, see, Leo, see, we knew all along Trump was right. Yeah, Trump was surveilled, according to the reports, but not because Trump Tower was tapped or because Donald Trump's calls were tapped, because he was calling people who were already under a tap, because they were suspicious. They were perhaps even enemies of the state. And because of their activity, we were watching them. We do that. It's called intelligence gathering. It's what we do. Nothing illegal about it. It's something that countries do. But to be caught in that crossfire, because now you happen to be out there, wow, right? That's a little bit unfortunate, I think. Now, how this is going to get spun remains to be seen. I didn't make those calls. I was surveilled, but that wasn't my call. You know, how's it going to get spun now? Because to me, this is the smoking gun, if ever there were one. I think there's already smoking guns in the Russian connection. But when the House Intelligence Committee comes forth with a statement, it was almost like an impromptu press conference. It was nobody there. You see this video, Nunes revealing the information. And now, even the president himself saying he feels vindicated. What? You feel vindicated because you were calling people who were under surveillance and you got caught in that crossfire? I don't think that's vindication. I think that is indictment. There's something that's happened here, which we still don't know. We still don't know. Why is Trump talking to people who are under surveillance by the U.S.? Now, the Trump supporters are going to say, well, that's because they were worried about him, and it's all political. I know where the spin is going to go. But that's simply not remotely reality according to what this appears to be. And I don't think that we know yet. I really don't think that we know yet. But I don't think that we could sit by and go, ha, 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 see? We knew all along. It's just what we thought. That darn Barack Obama, he was up to no good, and he was watching the president the whole time before he became the president. No, that's not what this says. Please understand what it says. And as I said on Facebook, what's worse than being surveilled by Barack Obama? Being caught being surveilled because you were in the crossfire while the surveillance was against our enemies. So I think this is a very, this is the thickener. You know, the arrowroot just went in. Or the cornstarch, whatever you prefer, went into the stew. And this is now getting thicker and thicker. And how this gets navigated is going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. Because, of course, it is going to be spun that this was all the Democrats up to no goodness. When it's not even the Republicans up to no goodness. It appears to be the president up to no goodness, which I've been asking from the beginning. Is this guy really who he says he is? Does he really have the country's interest at heart, or is he deepening his pockets? Is he trying to set himself up? Because now he's got the clout. He had the money, and he could get things done with money. But now when you got money and power, doors just swing wide the heck right open. Then what do you do? That's what I see happening here. That's the question that I'm asking. How does this ultimately work? Because, wow, right? This appears to be a bombshell. I'm going to look like an idiot. There's going to be something that's going to be swept under the everythingness on this, and it's going to be like, oh, Leo, come on. Look at this. Look at that. Now, you don't know what you're talking. Again, you don't know what you're talking about. Everything's on the up and up. Everything is good here. Nothing to see. Move along, which is what we've heard from the beginning. Time and time again, squeaky clean. This is some squeaky cleanness here. Don't even point those fingers. We don't know. At this point, we're going to watch it. We're going to see where it goes. We're going to see if it goes anywhere or if it's just one of those that's like, oh, okay. Remember we were talking about that like several weeks ago? What happened to that? Why did we never hear any more about it? And then, of course, this as now we begin the attempt to repeal and replace Obamacare, and there are Republicans who are against this. So the president, in a couple of tight spots, I believe, when it comes to this revelation from the House Intelligence Committee, and then facing his own when it comes to trying to get his health care passed through Congress. Interesting day. Interesting day. We'll keep watching this and see how it shapes up. More to come in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this. Back, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things we talk about for 50 minutes every afternoon. Lots of things happening on the Capitol Hill, the White House. We've got the Affordable Care Act being reviewed today, trying to get passage through the House and Senate, trying to move this forward to repeal and replace Obamacare. Now, there's a gentleman who is on the campaign trail just as gung-ho and as Trump-erific as he possibly could have been, who's changing his tune, literally, because he's a guy who plays guitar and does little ditties about supporting Trump. That's what he did. And now he's saying his son, who died, unfortunately, of a substance abuse overdose, it appears as though there's less support in the revised healthcare plan for these type of challenges than before under Obamacare. No surprise, right? No surprise. But what it's done is it's caused this guy to be rather, he's turned. He's done a 180 on his support because he's saying, I relied on what I heard from this president's rhetoric or from this candidate's rhetoric leading to his presidency that this was not going to be this way. Why it is this way is a concern, obviously. And so much of a concern that he's saying, I can't sing his songs anymore. So the question really is, what happens in broad support? Now, the president's been out there pushing his plan and saying, this is going to happen. It's going to be better. More people are going to be covered. We're going to make sure that everything is just the way it was. Well, then why fix it? Right? I mean, really, if that's the case, what are you fixing? Now, I get changing the mandate. Take the mandate away. That's all you got to do. Hey, you don't have to have this, okay? You're not going to get fined if you don't have health care. That's your prerogative, although it would be better. But you know what? We're going to make sure the safety net is now even bigger than it was. Because now, instead of the income limits being this to that, we're going to expand it to here. Because, you know, families are struggling. We know that. And we know that corporations can't provide fully paid health insurance. And if you're already paying $300 to $500 a month from your company's share, then why don't you just go here and get better care and have a way to put that money in this place as opposed to that? There are ways to fix this. This is what I said at the beginning. There are ways to offer a healthcare plan, completely comprehensive, that would cover anyone and everyone who doesn't have insurance. Leave those who have insurance alone, the ones that are working, the group health plans where people are paying in and the company's paying in and everybody's happy and they got a Cadillac plan and it's all working. Let that be what it is. Leave it alone. Don't raise the premiums by 30% because now that's unsustainable. And I know that that's a portion. That's just a portion of an overall expense in a company, but payroll and benefits, that's big. It's a big line item. And you go taking a piece of that line item and jacking it up by 30%, we're talking about unsustainability for a lot of businesses. And that's why. That's why companies said, oh, I'm going to have to put you on a different pay structure. Can't be a full-time employee anymore with benefits. We got to change you to a contractor status. Or you know what? We're going to have to cut the hours back and just make you part-time. I know these pains. I know them. I know them personally, intimately, from running a company. I get it. So don't make that part of this. Fix that part, but make sure people are covered. And especially make sure, my goodness, now, more than ever, make sure substance abuse is covered. Just a few days ago, I read the story where it was in Boston. I'm trying to remember where the story came from, and forgive me for not knowing the exact city. Family wakes up, four kids, ages what, 12 to 17, something like that. I mean, they were all close in age, and they were young up to teenager. Wake up to find their parents dead in their bedroom. Both of them, both parents dead from a heroin overdose. One of the guys, a commercial airline pilot, I think. I mean, those guys don't have hugely highly stressful jobs, and they typically make decent money, and you don't think that this is the profile. And you also don't think this is a profile that the husband and wife are doing heroin together. How did that happen? But I heard another report recently where we're at this point now in our country where we've got people who are, we've got a mortality rate, an increasing mortality rate among white middle-class Americans because they have no hope. And they're turning to things of this nature. They're doing more drugs. They're consuming more substances to the point that now we've got an increased mortality rate. Now tell me why in this day and age, given the dynamics that we have, why would we not be doing anything other than finding ways to fix that? It's what we talk about all the time. We get symptoms. These are symptoms. These are not the problems. You can say, well, we got a heroin problem, got an opioid addiction problem. No, we don't. We got a symptom that's showing up as a problem of that nature. But there's something deeper than that. What is it? What is happening in these lives of these individuals that they feel like this is what they've got to do? And, you know, and I get, believe me, I got a lot on my plate, tons of things happening on any given day. And I know what it's like to say, hey, I'm going to kind of escape into something different. I play music. I write a lot of music. I play a lot of my favorite songs. I do a little acoustic thing on the side. It's kind of my drug, right? That's what I do. I go there and I don't think about the crazy stuff that is going on in my other worlds. I just go and do that. And it is what it is. And it's always been. It's always been for me this world of I can go there meditatively. It's always been a therapeutic experience. I think many musicians would agree with me. There's a therapy to their music. And it's cathartic, especially when you're performing music that speaks to you or you're writing music that speaks to you from a very deep and visceral experience. This is what you get. But it's still that let's step into this world. And many artists have that. Many artists are that type. They're that type of, they know, they've learned how to channel their energies. And those who are on opioids have not. So the problem is an opioid. The problem is, how do you channel your energy? Because any of us could be on that precipice of despair if we didn't find a way to channel the energy. We're all going to have the ups and downs. Everybody's got mood swings. Some people are much more apparent, right? They're much more expressive with those swings, and you see those swings much more readily than others, but it's still, we're here, we're there, we're all over the place. And everybody's going to deal with challenges. And one person's challenge is going to be just as devastating as the other person's challenge, and it's going to be completely different. Totally different. They're not going to be the same thing. And we can never say, I know how you feel, because you don't. You can never say, really? You need to get over that one, because that's nothing, because it's not. But we can say, wow, you know what? I know how tough it can be to deal with things. I experienced that myself. But here's what I do, and it's really helped me. I find time to do this. I find time to channel my energy in this direction. I look for ways to express myself in this way, that way, the other way. And by doing that, it keeps me sane. It keeps me sane. I don't have to go into those darker crevices of escapism. I don't have to do that. Now, I know that's a ridiculously simplified version of what this is all about, but I'm just saying we got a problem. The problem is not the symptom that's showing up with what we've got. The problem is, can we help people find creative outlets? Can we find ways of getting people connected in ways that say, okay, you have tremendous self-worth. You have an opportunity. Your greatest ability is your availability. Get out there. Find ways to connect. Find ways to help. Find ways to offer your gifts and talents and whatever you can do. All of us are creative. We may not all be quote-unquote artists in the sense of being visually artistic or musically or from literature, whatever. We may not have that, but we're all creative because we're all created in the image and likeness of God. God is a creator. God is a generative individual. He is the power of creation. He's the power of generation, regeneration. Let's tap into that. Get into that flow of creativity. And it's all going to look different depending on who you are, what your gift that it is, what you can share, how you can develop this. But it is the key. That's the key. Get into that channel. Figure out what that is for you. That's what makes a difference. Great videos that I shared on my Facebook page. I'm going to get into this in the next segment. One, you talk about a guy using his giftedness. Colin Kaepernick, wow. Putting his money literally where his mouth is, putting a whole lot of his personal resources into helping the drought-stricken individuals of Africa. We're going to talk about that. And also finding God in the least expected place. More to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. Our culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. Video on my Facebook right now. I'll warn you, not safe for work if you have the volume up and you hear this guy's language. I think he's a Scottish guy. So, you know, other countries, what we consider foul language is just part of their communication. It really is not words. We get so hung up on words, like quote-unquote curse words. We're not cursing someone. We're not saying you need to go to hell, right? We're not saying that when we use words. And there are people with the pottiest of potty mouths who are the best of people, the biggest hearts, who do amazing things, who are living the gospel. I'm not one of those guys who are all about language. Now, I had to clean mine up, my own language up, years ago getting into radio. Because as a kid, I had a terrible potty mouth, and then it slipped a few times on the air, and I'm like, I just got to stop using those words. It wasn't a prudish thing for me. It was a professional thing for me because it is considered a challenge in broadcast radio, as it was at that time and still is. With community standards have relaxed a bit. You can say some things that you couldn't say then, but at the same time, I just cleaned it out and don't do it generally. I still, depending on the circle of individuals and their language, I will match their language in talking to people. I just do that. I'm not a prude. But it's just words, okay? So when you watch this, realize it's just words. The message here is what's important. Because apparently Trump decided to once again slam Colin Kaepernick about being a nobody and who cares and this guy's un-American and what's he doing and he's out there just trying to make a mess of things in the NFL. I mean, crazy, unfounded comments in his recent Louisville appearance. All the while, Kaepernick is getting Turkish Airlines, negotiating with Turkish Airlines to send a plane, a cargo plane, full of aid to drought-stricken areas in Africa. He has put $1 million into this thing, got a Kickstarter campaign. I think I think he raised the money and then offered to match whatever was raised in the Kickstarter. And it was like a $2 million already. I mean, the guy's a real deal. He's doing what we're all supposed to be doing. He's not out there as a talking head, just levying complaints or being the guy who wants to credit. He's saying, I've got resources, kind of what we were talking about before. He knows what his gifts are. He knows what he's been given, and he's given it. He's given it. He's doing what he's supposed to do. He should be an inspiration to us all. We should look at this guy and say, why am I not doing that? Why am I not being the one who's taken front and center? And how did he do it? He did it in a very bold but subdued fashion, simply by not standing in the national anthem. And then I got him attention, and people are like, who's this guy? And now he's going, you know who I am? Here's how I am. Here's my heart. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to help people in need. That's what I'm going to do. Matthew 25 says, this is how we'll be judged. He's showing us how to do it. Colin Kaepernick, whether you want to stand for the pledge or not, who cares? What he's doing is putting it out there, putting himself out there in a way that says, this is the way it's done. You make time of yourself, give of yourself, have the opportunities to be that individual for others. That's what he's doing. And praise God, literally, praise God for Colin Kaepernick doing what he's doing. Watch the video. Again, a couple of salty language areas there, but it's just the guy being himself with a very important message about what Kaepernick is doing, and praise for him. It's worth watching. Then the other, sharing Twinkies with God, I think is what it's called. Beautiful video of this kid, who, and this was shared by a priest friend of mine, and so I shared it. I would have anyway, not because I got this somewhat tacit endorsement of the priest who shared it, but this beautiful video of this kid going out and eating Twinkies with a homeless woman, as it appears. And then both of them realizing that they had an encounter with the supernatural, right? Jesus says, this is the law and the prophets. Love God, love others. And I believe that we love God. This is what Father Larry Richard says repeatedly. We love God only as much as the person we like the least. And that's tough, because there are people I like leaster, right? There are those who I leastly like all the time. Given on any given day, it could be a different list, right? Well, let's be honest. But when we realize that our willingness to love, our willingness, just the willingness to love others, is what it's about. Because when we're open to saying, I need to give the gift of availability back to that we talked earlier, I need to not only give the gift of availability, but abilities, whatever abilities I have that I can give. And as odd as it sounds, I'm going to even stretch out even further here because of so much I've been reading recently and kind of trying to come to grips with my own calling, right? Which I've struggled with. I've struggled with for a long time of like, what is it really? What is it I'm really supposed to do? But I think that being who you were created to be, who you were created to be, is not what others were created to be. And you might be able to evangelize just in your joy of being who you are when you really are who you are and you're letting yourself be who you are. And as long as that is not infringing into immoral territory, which there's plenty of things you could do that don't necessarily look like you're quote-unquote evangelizing. But you can evangelize with a life of generosity, a life of generation, a life of creation, an experience that says, you know what, I'm going to use everything I've been given and whatever I've got to make myself happy, right? To enjoy what I've got. I'm going to do that. And as a result of that, because of my contentedness, that's a witness. Because we were talking earlier about this despair that's out there in people who turn to drugs and this is what they think. You know, show me somebody who is truly enjoying the gifts that they've got. I think Kaepernick is doing it. I think he is. I saw the video. He is a joyous individual on this video. He is as ecstatic as he possibly could be talking about what's going to happen with this money they're raising and how they're putting this together. That fuels him. He's excited about that. And yeah, he's obviously gifted enough to play in the NFL. You 99.9% of football players who start off in the peewee leagues as kids and dream of the NFL don't end up there, and he did. But he's using all of his gifts. He's using them and directing them in the right fashion. And I think it's because he was willing to see God in others. He was willing to look at starving Africans and say, if I'm going to love God, I got to love these people. If I'm going to love God, I got to find a way to do everything I can to help these individuals out. If I'm a guy with any degree of integrity and I've got means and a platform and a voice, I darn well need to be doing everything I can to pull those pieces together to help these individuals. That's what he's doing. And I think that that's obviously a witness to grace. And he doesn't have to go out there and whatever, with some sort of potentially false pretense, make some outlandish claim of faith. He's showing it. We see it. You don't have to say, Jesus told me to do this. You're living the life of Christ. You're doing what Jesus told us to do. You're there already. You got it. You figured it out. You're setting the example for the rest of us. You set the bar high, very high for the rest of us. Now, if we're going to do what we can do, we got to figure out what it is that we're supposed to do and do it, right? That's what this is about. So, again, watch the video, the one I put the language warning on, realize what it is. Realize you're going to hear some F-bombs in there a few times. Probably don't want to have it on and up at work unless you want to, unless you're trying to get fired. If you're trying to get fired and that's a work policy, then enjoy that, because, and then take your vacation, your permanent vacation, enjoy. But otherwise, I want to warn you of that. But both incredible stories. One very, but I think both heartwarming. One is going to leave you a little bit like, why, what? What is this? Why is Donald Trump taking time to even say anything about Colin Kaepernick as an un-American, non-patriotic, sitting down during the national anthem guy? Who cares? Look what he's doing. Now, I've said that from the beginning. I've been a defender of Kaepernick. If you listen to me enough, you'll know that I've always been that. And it's an unpopular position. I get it. But show me people who are putting their money where their mouth is, like this guy, and I will always be impressed, regardless of anything else. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.